Never miss an episode of Scratched. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts to get new episodes as they become available.
Welcome to Scratched.
Hey everybody, it's Rick from Scratched, and welcome to episode 114. We had one of those nights where anything that could go wrong, well, it did go wrong. Anything from missing audio, mic failures, even video problems showed up and cursed us for this one. We did manage to capture a lengthy discussion around the equipment that we use, and although this might be a bit technical for some, hopefully for others, they can get some use out of this as well. While you're listening, head on over to Scratched.net, where you will find everything we have to offer under that umbrella, including past episodes, articles, etc. You can also contact us and follow us on Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. We'd love to hear from you on any of those platforms. So, well, before anything else goes wrong, let's dive into episode 114, The Audio Files Nirvana. Scratched.
Okay, so I use a program, after talking to Ryan a little bit, it's Magix. M-A-G-I-X Music Maker. It's an interesting program, but it reminds me a lot of Pro Tools. There's a lot to learn with it. But I guess the cool thing about both Audacity, which is free, and Magix, which is not, is you can use what are called plugins. VST, Victor Sam Tom. I don't know what that really stands for. Nilo, do you know? Or is it just that's what they call it?
It's a verb.
As far as I remember, there were two types originally of plug, or there were a few types, but they were proprietary and then I think open source. I could be wrong, but the VSTs, there are two different types of I don't know if it's codecs or file types for plugins. So there was RTAS, which was Pro Tools, and then there was the VST, which was used by Cakewalk and all the other guys. So you could typically, back in the day, use the VSTs and cross-use them, you know. Mm-hmm. But RTAS was just for Pro Tools.
Oh, okay. Okay.
VST is Virtual Studio Technology.
Well, there you go. Perfect.
And it comes in two forms. There's VSTs, which are effects plugins, like what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And there are VSTIs, which are instruments.
Oh.
So you can get like a virtual saxophone or a virtual guitar.
Oh.
So, which is all the music I make, most of the music, if I'm not playing my own guitar or something, is all VSTI instruments.
Cool. Yeah, I didn't know that. I didn't know that. So, anyway, the plugins then, as you know, everybody explained, literally tie into your system and you can do all kinds of cool stuff with it. I have one that'll take my voice way down deep. And then I can modulate that, and I can have all kinds of fun with it. And, you know, for as many programs as there are out there, you can find 50 billion plugins that fit. And most are free. Some I've found some just for one plugin, you're looking at $185. And although it seems really cool, there's no way to justify that for me. So, right. But yeah, whether you use Audacity or not, you know. Yeah, you can find a plugin that'll fit for you and do what you want to do. But Ryan, you're actually new to the XLR game, sort of, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. I started out when we started the podcast, and what I had been using for quite some time with our YouTube stuff was a USB mic, like what Eloy's using, much lower quality, but still a USB mic, same thing, condenser mic. And that was the CAD U37, and we got away from that because I wanted to, you know, up my game here. So the Focusrite that Rick got that came with the audio interface, it also came with a microphone, which he sent to me to use. And it's, I'm going to let him tell you what it was because I forgot already.
Yeah, it's a CM25 Mark II.
Right. Okay, and it sounds much, much better. I had to do a lot of jacking up of different things in the EQ, and, you know, it had to be compressed and everything. With the CAD mic, that doesn't seem to be the case so much with this. It kind of really picks up the low end a lot better than what the USB mic did. Other than that, Rick said he's running the Focusrite audio interface. I'm running the same thing, but a different brand. It's called a Behringer, which some of you might know from different audio things, and they make some guitars and stuff. But basically, same thing: XLR cable in, USB, like the almost like it's like the printer USB cable, right? Mm-hmm. That plugs into your printer. Mm-hmm. In there, and then typically I have been recording the first 8, 9, 10 episodes that we've done in this podcast with a program Rick turned me on to at the beginning, which I think we're all getting away from now, yeah. Called Voice Meter Banana, which served its purpose up to now.
Yeah.
But we're all getting away from that. Thus the XLR mics and the audio interfaces. But so now I'm using Audacity as we speak because of tweaking those things. And as Rick mentioned, Magix is what I use to always, I've been using for the past 10 years probably to edit any audio that I do. And basically the only thing I ever have to really mess with vocal-wise in there is compressor, which you guys can all attest to. That's always, mm-hmm. almost always a must.
Mm-hmm.
And EQ, and that's really about it. You know, my voice in particular, I usually have to drop the mids down a little bit because I'm not as... My voice isn't as deep. I'm a girly man.
No, stop it.
I usually have to up the low and then drop the mid. But other than that, setups are similar all the way around. And there's so many options. So many options.
Yeah. Eli actually was the first of us to have an audio interface, and he's had it for ages, right?
Forever.
Yeah, forever. The problem was when we started testing out the podcast, we never knew how to get that audio through while we were doing the show. And, man, just out of the blue, Eli's like, okay, well, I went down to Sam Ash and dropped some cash, and I went, uh-oh. Because I know how much, you know, these things run, and they're not cheap. Not by a long shot, you know. But you got a hell of a deal.
It was a steal.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a steal.
You should really...
$79?
Yeah.
Do you remember?
I think it was like...
I know I'm the one that paid for it, but
yeah.
I don't remember the price.
$89, you got the case, you got the shock mount, you got the whole nine yards. So, oh, yeah, for those that aren't familiar with it, and unfortunately the audio folks won't be able to see this other than through, you know, audio description, a shock mount basically keeps you from making noise. It absorbs like a shock absorber, and you can get all kinds of different shock mounts depending on the mic you have. I think Ryan and I are using the absolute cheapest ones on the market, and I think they're incredibly good. You know, what'd you pay for yours?
I can't imagine that this shock mount and this arm cost more than probably $20 total between the two.
Yeah, total. I don't think I spent that much either. And oddly enough, I pulled another mic out. The one thing I will caution folks on is if you do go XLR happy, you're going to become hopefully more in control than myself. I've become sort of a microphone slut. And matter of fact, just to illustrate that point, we were having a conversation offline one time, and Eli has always mentioned, you know, the Shure, I think it's the 58 that's the most one used on stage and stuff, or is the 57?
No, it's the SM50. Well, the one that I've usually used since we were kids was a SM57,
okay.
Which is the one that looks like a stick, like a pencil.
Yeah, it really does. The viewing audience is getting a picture of that now. The 58 is the one I'm more familiar with, at least in terms of body style, and that's the one with the big bulb on the top.
Right.
You know, that in and of itself are the ones that are most primarily used, you know, in all of my research. But Eli turned me on. Which one is it? The SMB? What is it?
Is it the SM7B, right?
Yeah, I think it's a 7B. Yeah. That mic is gorgeous. I'm just saying. Yeah, I want to get naked and rub on that mic. And It's absolutely beautiful. Joe Rogan, in Joe Rogan Experience, uses that for not only his own mic, but everybody else's too. And we were having a chat offline one day, and I sort of threw this fantasy wish up. I said, okay, I'm going to get everybody audio interfaces, the Focusrite. I'm going to get everybody 7Bs, and we're going to have the most amazing sound ever. And then reality set in, and I went, oh, God, that's like almost $2,000. So I'll wait. But, yeah, I mean... Sure's the top of the line, right, Eli? I mean, is there...
Well, They're the go-to workhorse. I'm gonna say work whore. They're the work whore of the. They're the ones that every studio has a couple, if not more, of the Shure. But you know, obviously, there's like German-made microphones that are outrageous and stuff. But yeah, they're the go-to mics.
You're speaking of the Neumann. Is that how you say it?
Yeah, the Neumanns. Yeah. There's another brand called Rode.
Oh, yeah, those are good. But oh my god, ka-ching.
There's a new brand. Well, it's not new anymore. It's been out like 20 years. But for me, I don't know. It's new. Like I remember when it first came out. So I was like, oh, these are the new guys. And it's called Blue.
Mm. Oh,
the Blue series of microphones.
Yeah. Really?
Those are pretty. Yeah.
They've been around that long?
I think so. Yeah, 20 years.
Wow. Okay, because I had
it. Or maybe it could be 15 years.
I started with the Blue, right?
The Yeti.
Yeah.
Which
the
one?
Blue Yeti.
Oh, that's right. Yeti. Okay, so that believe it or not. See, I didn't know they were blue. I thought Yeti was just Yeti. Believe it or not, that's a badass freaking microphone company. Oh. Just so that you know.
I don't doubt that for a minute.
Like, that's, yeah, like they are badass. They're badass.
I will say this. My Blue Yeti did not take a static discharge very well, which is how, probably none of them will, really, but that's how I ended up with the XLR. But, yeah. No, I loved my Blue, my Yeti. The problem I had with the Yeti, you know, aside from its massive size, right, because it's freaking humongous. But the main problem I had with the Blue was when they manufactured that thing, they didn't manufacture the 5/8 hole at the bottom properly. It's like the 32nd or 16th off. So the shock mounts you buy, or, you know, every microphone mount that you get has either a 3/8 or a 5/8 adapter in it. None of those would fit because the hole was too big. So I'd go to put this thing over my head, which is where I thought it sounded the best, and it was out of my way, and the damn thing would fall. And, you know, you don't want this, 2.5-pound behemoth dropping on your head in the middle of a broadcast, or a recording or whatever. So but I was thinking already of changing mics, and then when I blew that one up, I thought, well, that made my decision pretty quickly for me, And that ozone, yay. So...
How much do those go for?
I got mine for $129. You can get different colored ones, like a cobalt, I think, is another one they call it, or something like black ice, maybe. I'm not sure. Those are like $149 and upwards. It's like everything else. You can get a pro version. They throw three letters on it, and suddenly it's worth 30% more. Magic, But then Blue also makes the Snowball, which is widely used in the podcast world because, A, it's cheap, and, B, it sounds pretty good. I think Alan, when he did with us, he has a Snowball. But I have to tell you, now that I'm on XLR, I will never do a USB mic again, even though...
Yeah, but Blue does have XLR mics. Mm-hmm. They have the Spark, which I think it's the orange one. It's like an orange condenser. I mean, they have, apart from USB...
I have.
You guys knew that, right?
I have seen only on their websites, the Blue Spark, and I have never heard anything in terms of its use or anything like that. I'm trying desperately to find an image now to throw up, but that's the one I was thinking of. Now that I found it, it looks like a lollipop, right?
Yeah,
$299, and it is XLR. The image is coming up now for the home viewers here. It's a gorgeous looking mic, considering there's nothing really around the oh crap, I can never remember what's inside. Eloy, help me.
The capsule.
Thank you. The capsule's not encapsulated. Like with my microphone, if I took the fuzzy thing off, you would just see webbing around the outside of it, and if you held it up to the light, you could see the capsule. But this thing's on the outside, which I find really interesting.
And which one is this?
That's the Blue Spark.
Is that the one I'm looking at right now that's $4,000?
No. Well, I mean, maybe the one I'm looking, the one I posted up just now, or posted, Jesus, Mary and Joseph, the one I transitioned to was $299. I don't know that I ever saw.
They
one.
Have higher end. They have higher end stuff that can go up more expensive, but I don't know if in the thousands like that. But it's absolutely possible.
The one I was looking at here, in case anybody listening is curious. You guys have mentioned Neumann. They have a Neumann U67, and this microphone used. Now, I don't know where this is being sold from. It looks like it's being sold from directly from their site. $16,000.
I don't doubt that for a minute. I don't doubt that for
no. Those are the ones. Mm-hmm. Those are the studio. Those are the ones that have been, you know, tested and retested in every rock song that you could possibly imagine throughout history.
Yeah.
Those microphones.
It is a multi-pattern tube condenser mic.
Tube condenser. Now that's new.
It has
new.
A tube nice. Built into it.
That's
literally
new.
Like a TV. It almost looks like a TV tube.
Well, microphones, it's just like all sorts of equipment. There's preamplification that uses, before stuff used tubes like in TVs, and they give off a certain warm sound, so that's very desirable, like right out of the box. So those are pretty expensive, and now they're still used, and you can use them in preamps. There's preamps with tubes, all sorts of guitar amplifiers with tubes, and the sound is beautiful, lush.
Okay, the reason this microphone is $16,000, it is a vintage mic. And you should see the pins on this thing. I will have to put that in the show notes so people can refer to it. But you know how these XLR microphones we're using have the 3-pin?
Right.
This looks like it has 7 pins.
Wow. 7?
So, yeah, it's a pretty beefy looking get up here. The audio interface is ancient, but it's pretty neat. It's called the U67.
Is it rectangular?
The top is, the cage is, the mesh, but the microphone itself is round.
So what we used to do back in the day, we used to go to my friend's warehouse and down here in Bird Road, and we had our like drum set up and all that, and we'd suspend that PZM or PM, I think it's PZM, microphone from the ceiling, and it would capture the whole band. It sounds live, but it was very, 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 very clear, the sound was. And they were flat like a square pancake, these microphones, that you could sit it like flat on the ground or on something, but you would suspend it and it would capture. Dude, amazing. I don't know if you could find it.
Yeah, I think I just, not a PZM per se, unless that's, I was thinking when you were saying that the PZM might be the manufacturer, not necessarily what I think is actually the style, perhaps. But anyway, I found an Audio Technica ATR 4697, and it's exactly as you described, as flat as a pancake. Based on what I'm seeing, and I'm showing this on the screen, it does look like it's fairly small too, considering. Yeah, it almost looks like a coaster with a cord hanging out of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's exactly it. What does the stats say on it and stuff?
It is a condenser, and I suppose now's as good a time as any to say this. A condenser mic will require phantom power, meaning some sort of power source that's delivering electricity to the microphone. A dynamic mic will not require phantom power, so you can just plug it right into your XLR cable and go. But that said, it's 50 hertz to, 50 to 15,000 hertz, which is exactly what my AT2020 is. Looks like 1,000 ohm, and it says it's omnidirectional. So that would explain why it was able to pick up everything in terms of, you know, the one mic hanging from the ceiling. so to speak. But it is a 3.5 millimeter or quarter inch jack.
Okay, if the one that you're talking about is a condenser, that's not what we use.
Okay.
I mean, I think it's in the family of, but I'm going to link to you guys so you can see it. At least this is what it looked like. And actually, it's exactly it. Let me share it with you guys. And it's expensive as heck.
Yeah.
I just
realized.
The one
I was looking at is like $26. So clearly, we weren't talking about at least the same model anyway.
Okay.
This one, dude, this one costs $399.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's a boundary. So it's like unbelievable. So this is exactly what we had. I didn't know it was that expensive, though. There's cheaper ones.
That's cool. I guess there are as many microphones.
They use these, they use these to mic orchestras.
That would make sense, right?
Wow.
I mean, orchestras are huge, especially a real professional one. Good Lord, the Boston Philharmonic is... God, you could fill a baseball field or an outfield anyway. You know, they're huge. Huge.
Well, we had one for recording a teenage rock band that was always fighting on of, you know, who's going to be singer, guitarist, and whatnot. So we captured a lot of beautiful moments of unity.
I hope that microphone's not sitting on your belly.
It is.
Oh, man. Oh, well, there went the weekend.
No, it's got the shock mount on it,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, I know. Okay.
What? What are you thinking? You could say it.
What? You cut out.
That it's sitting on my belly.
Oh, when your microphone sits on your belly, you have a tendency to get far away and real close and far away and real close and far away and really
close. I see.
Yeah. The shock mount helps a little bit, but it doesn't stop everything. Like right now, I'm sure that came through the audio.
Right.
You know. A shock mount's going to stop little movements, but it's not going to stop everything, you know. It's all right.
Well, I had to lean back, though, because my eyes were starting to, the way I was sitting. Mm-hmm. And, like, when I lean back, I have received some relaxation to my eye, like, I guess the distance in the back. So I had to do it in order to continue, because I was, like, getting a little bit visually dizzy. Mm-hmm.
But you have a stand, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. But what do you, I have a stand with me now, but I can't place it. Like,
No. Don't do that. What I'm saying is the big long stand with the long arm. Right?
Yeah, but it's totally... The way I'm facing, it's so...
Well, there's a reason I'm asking
uncomfortable.
That. Uncomfortable. Ryan and I both... You have the newer arm, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. I hate it. I liked it at first because it was new and you know, I changed desks around recently and got one with a little bit more room for me to work in, a little bit more room... Or a little bit more space for me to do my thing. The problem in doing that is now I've got this, what has become this short extension arm, and I've been trying to figure out a way to make it work, and I'm tired of making it work. So my idea was to do what you have and get the floor stand with the long extension boom arm. But I don't know enough about them to make the proper purchase for what I want to do, and I was going to talk to you about that because I know they make them that'll sit on your desk, but then that eliminates... You know, then I have to move and slide the thing around and do whatever.
The thing about that, though, is you like to move your mic around, right?
Mm-hmm.
That might become an issue with mics because I know we use them at church and they're fixed. Like they have a set screw, you fix them, they stay.
Oh.
So if you want to move it, you have to unscrew it and slide it.
Oh, man.
And adjust it.
No, what we need, or at least what I need, would be an articulating type of, you know, stand so that you could actually do that. But the issue, the ideal thing would be to have a condenser like the B7, and that way it cancels out any type of noise and you just basically can move it around however you feel like Joe Rogan does.
Yeah, they don't have... Those mics are not in a shock mount, I noticed. Mm-hmm. And I, because he's like me, he bounces that thing around all the time. You know, I have to have something to fidget with. It's just who I am. You know, the ADD runs strong with this one. And I was hoping that may be the solution, but clearly it's not going to be. But I notice he's bouncing that thing around like I do, and I don't hear it at all. You know,
right.
His guests keep it nice and perfect, and they're like rigid and they don't move. But he's all over the map with that thing. You know, he's back, he's forward, he's left, he's right, he's up, he's down.
But there's also a thing to be said about letting. Okay, so you want a certain amount of control so that things don't get so that, like right now, me getting close, like you were saying originally. Mm-hmm. I just realized that I was getting like way close. Yeah. You're right. It's better to have it positioned where. But anyways, that shoots my whole theory that I was about to explain out the water.
Well, and I wasn't pointing it out to harp on you. I used it as a transition to where I was going. It just.
Okay, continue, because I just realized I started creeping closer and closer and closer to the mic. You're totally right.
Look, I do it too. Right, I do it too. I mean, there are times when I'm right on that sucker. I'm just loving on that thing, you know.
Now see that Shure, he uses the Shure SM7B or SMB7, right, or whatever it's called.
7B, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Now I noticed, and I'm sure this has to do with his producer, whatever, mixing on the fly while he's doing this. When he moves away and moves closer, there's no change in the volume of his voice, like say what mine probably sounds like right now.
Yeah, I'm getting space. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. But if you notice when he's talking
and he's not happy about it. Like your live experience.
Right, a demonstration.
I'm fine with it. As long as it's demo.
Right. But you notice when he moves away, there's no constant fluctuation in volume.
Yeah.
I mean, and like I said, I'm sure part of that's his producer, but or his mixer
know.
Or whatever.
I don't think it is. Because
I mean, I don't. It's hard to say.
No, and let me tell you why it's not. When you look at the pattern on some of these microphones we buy, like for example, Eli mentioned earlier the cardioid pattern. Take your heart shape with your hands and imagine where the butt part of the heart is. That's where the microphone sits. Like that's mm-hmm. that's the point on the heart is the dead center of where the mic is, and it picks up a pattern all the way around there in that kind of shape. Okay.
Okay.
A dynamic mic is highly focused. Instead of being a roundish pattern, it's more of a cone. Okay. So if it's picking up anything inside that cone, yeah, I mean, if you're 15 feet away, perhaps you'll hear it a little
sure.
differently. But, you know, the 3 or 4 inches that we're talking about in terms of movement, I think because of the dynamic structure of that microphone, he can do what he's doing and not have any kind of, you know, spacing effect.
Right.
And Eli, correct me if I'm wrong, because you are the consummate professional with this stuff. We're just spitballing. You think that holds water at all, or am I smoke blowing smoke again?
I think that's pretty much it, though. Like what you said, because I mean, when we were in the studio, about a few years ago, and we were at SAE Studios, we were recording like 3 songs, and I was doing vocals live, playing my guitar with the drums and the bass in the same room, and the mic that they busted out was the SM57 because it cancels out. I mean, you could hear it through the mic. I have the recording, like individual tracks in there in one of the hard drives, but you could even still hear obviously the loud drums and this and that, but you could actually draw from that live setting my vocals enough to edit them out, edit out the rest for the most part. So they do cancel out a lot of pretty much everything, and you talk into it and that's what it captures. Anything else is kind of canceled out, so they're good for that purpose.